The title for this conference is A Balanced Life. St. Thomas Aquinas defines virtue as that which stands in the middle between two opposite extremes. The quality most needed for a well-developed personality, for maturity, for wholeness, for holiness, is a balance or a proper tension between opposite extremes. The more balanced one is, the more quickly one progresses in all the qualities necessary for wholeness and holiness. It is this balance between apparently contradictory goods, apparently contradictory virtues, that allows a person to tolerate the high tension necessary for rapid progress, both in nature and in grace. Without this balance, the pressure in one particular direction will become intolerable and break out or burst to the more or less serious harm of the whole person. We could define sin as a lack of balance, which in turn results in a division between what we should be and what we are. Whereas balance brings unity, a lack of balance results in disunity. Balance means harmony among all the diverse parts of our personality, each knowing and keeping its own particular place and fulfilling the task intended for it as created by God. If one part of our personality neglects to fulfill its particular task, this either leaves a gap in the whole personality or forces some other part, some other function that is not properly equipped for the task to try to cover up for that which we have neglected to use. And so, all of life is meant to be an effort to establish a polarity, a balance between opposite poles. These opposites should maintain their individuality, but at the same time be united in a conjunction, in a marriage, if you wish, with each other. Now, to do this will result in a constant tension between these two opposite poles, requires a constant effort and struggle on our part to maintain the union and the tension. Because the struggle is difficult, many people attempt to resolve the tension by denying or eliminating one or the other pole, and adhering to only one side of the truth. Because this frequently gives temporary relief from the struggle, from the tension, many people are thereby lulled into accepting this peace at any price as the solution to their problem. But what actually happens is that the particular pole that is consciously denied does not really disappear, but goes underground and remains in the unconscious regions of one's inner being. There it festers away until suddenly it erupts in some unexpected and bizarre way at a later date. We can say that Christianity is based upon a conjunction of opposites, namely, the divine nature versus the human nature of Jesus Christ. This balance between opposite poles runs as a constant theme throughout the whole of authentic Christianity. Because of the tension that such a balance causes, and the constant struggle needed to maintain this tension. We find throughout the course of Christian history, countless Christians have sought to eliminate the problem by denying one or the other opposing pole. This only gives a temporary relief and will resurface at some later time. In that sense, fanaticism or extremism arises whenever a person chooses one extreme pole of the balance and denies the validity of the other pole. We find even today many Christians accusing those who disagree with them as being fanatics. But these same Christians fail to recognize the seeds of fanaticism in their own stubborn position. I think it can be safely presumed that all of us are fanatical in one way or another. This seems to be the lot of human existence on earth. We must constantly strive for balance, but we never wholly maintain balance, except perhaps for just brief moments or brief periods in the course of our life. The image I have of our human existence is that of a drunken driver who can never keep a steady path in the particular lane of traffic, but is always going from one side to the other. It behooves us to recognize and accept ownership for our own fanaticism, our own lack of balance, our own extreme positions. And one of the best ways is, how strong are we in criticizing and judging and condemning people who disagree with us, who have taken a position at the opposite end of the spectrum? This attempt to maintain balance in our life is what has come to be called the centrist position. A central position or balance tension between the traditional and the progressive points of view, between the conservative and the liberal point of view, between what has come to be called the far right and the far left. If we are ever to arrive at truth, we must recognize that truth exists in opposite poles, that the whole truth can never be comprehended in any one aspect of truth. And there are very few people in the world today that totally deny all truth who adhere to total falsehood. If a person is mistaken, is in error, it is almost always because that person adheres to a partial truth, to just one side of the truth, and denies opposing sides of the truth. And so all of life, we must struggle to maintain this balance. Such a balance, such attention, if we are successful in maintaining it, is productive of new energy, of new life. In fact, it is through the very tension of opposite poles that all energy is produced. I can think of two instances that are apparent to all of us. One of them is electricity, the positive and the negative. It's through that tension of these opposite poles, the plus and the minus, that, for example, the energy of the battery in your car, the energy that comes from the two wires, the positive and negative wires that bring the electricity into your home, Without that tension, without that balance, we would not have enjoy that energy that electricity brings into so many areas of our life. And the other obvious need of balance between opposites is sexuality. Sexuality, the male and the female, is present wherever there is life, and would perhaps even be present in those areas of reality that are not yet living, but certainly in all of life, with almost no exceptions, you find the male and the female. And it is only in the conjunction, it's only when these two poles maintain their own individuality, but come together in a balanced tension, that there is released this creativity of new life. The third chapter of the book of Ecclesiastes talks about this tension, this balance between opposites. It says, there is an appointed time for everything, a time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to uproot, a time to kill, and a time to heal, a time to build up, and a time to tear down, a time to weep, and a time to laugh, a time to mourn, and a time to dance, a time to gather, and a time to scatter, a time to embrace, and a time to be far from embraces, a time to seek, and a time to lose, a time to keep, and a time to cast away, a time to tear, and a time to sow, a time to speak, and a time to be silent, a time to hate, and a time to love. In our book, Arise, A Christian Psychology of Love, we devote four whole chapters to the importance of this balance, tension, if we are to become a mature Christian. The first chapter that we talk about this is chapter 3, and it is entitled The Law of Polarity, Opposites Attract. In that particular chapter, we talk about the need of a proper balance between divine grace and human effort. We know in the course of the history of Christianity how people have become heretical by denying one side or the other. The most famous instance is that of the Pelagians in the time of St. Augustine, who overemphasized human effort and denied the necessity of divine grace. There have been other times when human effort has been discounted, and we have too much emphasized that it's all up to God. So it's only a balance between the two. And the other area that chapter 3 of Arise discusses at quite some length is the necessary balance between consciousness and the unconscious. Jung's theory is that only about 20% of our nature is conscious, that as much as 80% of our personality is still below the level of consciousness. And therefore, we need to have a balance. If we are too strong in emphasizing the conscious, we neglect that 80% of our human nature. And as a result, we do great harm. We become very fanatical, very unbalanced, very much of an extremist. And I would say this is one of the problems and has been for quite a long time. We overemphasize in our Western culture the conscious values, we downplay the unconscious. On the other hand, if we overemphasize the unconscious, as has been done in some of the Eastern religions and the Eastern cultures, and downplay the conscious, this is just as fanatical and does just as much harm the other way. So we need constantly to strive for a good balance between consciousness and the unconscious. In chapter 4 of Arise, we talk about how the first 28 years of our life, we must try to maintain and attain a balance in our conscious life. That would be a balance of the different functions in our life, like a balance between sensing and intuition, between thinking and feeling, between the will and the mind, and on and on and on. These are all a part of the task of the first 28 years of our life. And then in the second period of life, which is adulthood from 28 to 56, we try then to establish the balance between the conscious and the unconscious. And to do this, we have to go into the unconscious and strike a balance there between authenticity and significance, between a love of self and a love of God, and between what Jung calls transparency and solidarity, between our responsibilities of love to other individuals and our responsibilities of love and service to the community. In chapter 6 in Arise, we go back to this question of the need of balance. It is titled The Art of Self-Discipline, A Balanced Tension. And in that particular tension, we talk about the need of a balance between self-development and renunciation. There is another book that is especially good in this particular area. It is a book by Teilhard de Chardin named Divine Milieu. He talks about the need of divinizing or sanctifying both our activities and our passivities. He talks about the need of a balance between growth and diminishment, between attachment and detachment. So I would strongly recommend a reading of Teilhard's book, Divine Milieu, to help you to come to an appreciation of the all importance of maintaining a good balance throughout our life. Besides this balance between self-development and renunciation, in our book, Arise, Chapter 6, we also talk about the need of a balance between freedom and submission. We in the Western world, and particularly this country, we love our freedom. We have a tremendous appreciation of freedom, but we have a tendency perhaps to go overboard in insisting on freedom. For example, in the area of abortion, we fail to emphasize sufficiently the necessity of submission to a higher authority, that none of us are meant to be a god to ourselves, that all of us need to submit ourselves to the higher authority of divine law, the law of life, for example. And so, again, wholeness, holiness, maturity means a balance between freedom and submission. We also talk about, in that same chapter 6, of a balance between fulfillment and diminishment. You might say between success and failure. That all of life has something of both. It is not healthy. It is not good to have all success and never have any failure. Neither is it healthy, psychologically good, to experience nothing but failure. We need a balance between these two. And then on in chapter 7, remember there are 4 chapters in our book on Arise that talks about the topic that I'm discussing in this conference, and I would strongly recommend that you read them, chapters 3, 6, 7, and 8. And actually there's a 5th chapter, chapter 4, in the stages of growth that also deals with balance. But in chapter 7, which is entitled Openness to Change, we talk about the need of a balance between confidence and humility. This is brought about in a special way through the two gifts of the Holy Spirit, the gift of piety and the gift of fear of the Lord. The gift of piety gives us this confidence in God that results from our conviction that we are God's children, that God loves us with an infinite love. The gift of fear of the Lord enables us to grow in humility, to recognize our creatureliness, to recognize our nothingness as a creature apart from God, to realize, as St. Paul says, that we have nothing that we have not received, that of ourselves we are nothing, that whatever good is there is due to God. Now, a recognition of that truth is what we call humility, or we can call it authenticity. In that same seventh chapter, we also talk about the need of a balance between tenacity and meekness. The text from the third chapter of Ecclesiastes that I quoted, I think, expresses this very well. There's a time to hold on to things and there's a time to let go. There's a time to be tenacious, to be stubborn, to stick to our particular way, regardless of the opposition. And there is also a time to surrender, a time to compromise, a time to give in, a time to sacrifice our position, a time to agree with others. And finally, in chapter 7, we talk about the need of a balance between boldness and prudence. Boldness is when we stick our neck out and take chances and willing to risk everything for the sake of God or for the sake of service to others. Prudence is when we hold back and are much more careful in making our decisions. There is the need of both boldness and prudence. And finally, in chapter 8 of Arise, we talk about the need of a balance between our ego and the self. Now, this actually takes us back to that chapter 3, where we talk about the need of a balance between our conscious life and our unconscious life. In chapter 8, we talk about the ego, which is the center of conscious life. It's the focal point around which all of our conscious faculties revolve. And the self, or the inner person, is the center of not only our unconscious, but of our whole being, of our whole life, both conscious and unconscious. But it is especially the focal point of the archetypes and the shadow and all of those other areas that are below the level of consciousness. They all come to a focus, a point in the self. And so, for psychological maturity, for wholeness, there is an absolute necessity that we try to develop both our ego and our self, and then try to maintain a good balance, a tension. And this requires effort. This is not easy. To make the necessary effort to keep a good balance between ego and self. And this will be productive of new life, of new energy, similar to the balance between the positive and negative poles of electricity, or between the male and the female genders in all of life. In our other book, Prayer and Temperament, in the epilogue, pages 119 and 120, we also talk about another form of balance that needs to be maintained in our prayer life. In our book, Prayer and Temperament, we talk about the different types of prayer, the different ways of making contact with God. There are five particular ways of prayer that we explain in that book, Prayer and Temperament. And one of the things that we insist upon is that we try to keep a balance. There will be one type of prayer that we use more often than the other, but this should be balanced with at least an occasional exposure to the other forms of prayer. And in the epilogue, we particularly warn against the danger of becoming fanatical, of going to extremes, of taking up a position at one particular pole of truth, and as a result, we distort the whole picture. So, for example, we say that we have to be careful when we are using Lectio Divina, that type of Benedictine prayer that has been traditional in Christianity for so many centuries, that this must be balanced with what we call the virtual prayer of action. It's not just enough to stay on our knees or in church or spend all day in prayer, that this has to be balanced with action. Otherwise, we become fanatical. We become unbalanced. We are no longer whole. Ignatian prayer, the danger there is the externalism that was practiced so much by the Pharisees, which Jesus condemned. The danger there is just to take prayer and work at it in merely the external way without ever that personal application. As Jesus said, "These people honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me." When dealing with Franciscan prayer, the danger there is that we overemphasize good works. It's just the opposite of Lectio Divina. And we just give free rein to whatever we want without any practice of self-discipline. This can end up in what we call secular humanism, which is really the prevailing religion of the majority of Americans today. In dealing with Augustinian prayer and spirituality, the danger there is what has been called Manichaeanism, where there is an overemphasis on the spirit to the neglect of the body, where everything that is bodily is considered sinful and evil. We see this in Puritanism, particularly in our country. When we're dealing with Thomistic prayer, the danger here is Jansenism, which grossly exaggerates the requirements needed for salvation, thus denying heaven to a major portion of the general population. The necessity of balance runs through every area of our life. We know now the whole feminist movement is an attempt to get back to a better balance between the male and the female. For thousands of years now, we have been living in a patriarchal society that grossly overemphasizes the male to the neglect of the female. We know that in the past there was more emphasis on God and not enough emphasis on human nature. So we need to have that balance between the two, the balance between individual and the community, between love of self and the love of others, between independence and dependence, between justice and mercy, between the introvert and the extrovert, between the head and the heart, between knowledge and love, between the body and the spirit, between the literal and the symbolic, between self-indulgence and self-denial, between feasting and fasting, between work and play, between suffering and pleasure, between reason and faith, between change and permanence, and finally between life and death. It is impossible for any one of us to be working at maintaining a balance between these opposite poles in all of these areas. But we need to pick out one or another of these balances and work at it until we have more or less successfully established the right tension, and then go on to another. And all of life, if we are ever to hope to reach wholeness, will involve a constant effort to maintain this balanced tension between opposites. This is the end of the conference on a balanced life.